Hello, everyone, brothers and sisters. Welcome to the Real Short Box Talks. My name is Kevin.
I'm Donald.
And today we're going to talk about a little quick podcast on unknown characters from some of our favorite teams. We're going to talk about unknown characters or underrated characters from the X-Men teams.
Yeah, this time we're talking about X-Men. X-Men Unite. Schniggit, shing, shing, schnick, schnick. I don't know how they say it. Claws are coming out, guys. Wolverine claws.
Yes, but we're not going to talk about him because he's probably the most well-known.
Deadpool and Wolverine, yes.
Yeah, those are like the two most well-known, so there's no reason to talk about them.
Two most overused characters. Absolutely.
Ridiculously overused characters.
Ridiculously. Here's one that's not, though, Kevin.
Give me one.
Sunfire.
Ah, yes, good old Sunfire. Shiro Yoshida.
Originally appeared in Uncanny X-Men number 64. Sunfire has some cool powers. He has the ability to fly, plasma blasts, he can view infrared, he has radiation immunity when he was a horseman named Famine, and the ability to emit hunger-inducing light. The fuck? What is that? What is the ability to emit hunger-inducing light?
That's kind of disturbing.
That has to be also as the Horseman of Famine, or maybe that is the one that is under the Horseman.
That's why that makes sense, because it sounds like some Apocalypse would.
Yeah. That just sounds silly. I'm so hungry! I'm just come on. You gotta come up with a better thing than that. Anyway, Sunfire is a temperamental and arrogant Japanese mutant who can generate superheated plasma and fly. Not suited for teamwork, Sunfire was only briefly a member of the X-Men and has kept limited ties to the team since. He's made appearances here and there and, you know, always, I think at one point they cut his legs off or some nonsense like that.
Jeez.
During an Apocalypse run.
Ouch.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. He was crawling on the ground with no feet. It's terrible.
It's pretty vicious.
But let's hear it from the horse's mouth, or mouth, Roy Thomas, who I think he was behind the creation of, he was behind the creation with Don Heck of Sunfire. So let's hear a little bit of what he has to say about it. I wanted to add a young Japanese or Japanese-American whose mother had been at Hiroshima or Nagasaki as a corresponding character to the X-Men, whose parents were, at that time, assumed to have been at the Manhattan Project. Stan Lee, of course, didn't give me any good reason for rejecting the character. He just didn't want to, I think. I didn't bring it up again, but when I came back to the book with Neil Adams, I created Sunfire, who was pretty much the character I had wanted to do some years earlier. So basically he's saying, neener, 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 Stan, I did it anyway. I didn't make him an X-Men right away. By that time, Stan gave me a little more free rein. In fact, he was included in Giant Size X-Men number 1, along with Banshee, precisely because I had gone around creating some international mutants with the goal of expanding the team at some time. I thought the X-Men shouldn't all be white Americans. Good for you, Roy Thomas. Good for you. So that's a little bit about Sunfire. Who do you have, Kevin?
Well, it's funny. I think you just mentioned his name already. That Roy Thomas also had a hand in creating Banshee.
Ah, yeah.
An Irish mutant. Someone you can relate to.
Mm-hmm. It's just potatoes.
With a wonderful... with sonic screams.
Mm-hmm.
Flight. Superhuman hearing. Concussive blasts. Sonic energy lances. The ability to cause nausea, disorientation, and unconsciousness. And he's immune to the powers of his brother, Black Tom Cassidy.
Hmm.
And Sean Cassidy, which is Banshee's real name, he debuted in X-Men 28 back in January 1967. And in fact, if you are familiar with the Giant Size X-Men number 1 cover, he is on there.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. That's right, he is, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
I forgot about that.
Yes, you know, you see the original five, yeah. And then on the background, you see him, like, you know, on the side, you know, running towards you. So
yeah, they're busting out, right?
They're busting out.
Because you see the old schoolers in the back, and they're, like, all proud and shit.
Yep.
And then the new school is, like, busting out. They're, like, coming at you. Coming at you, motherfuckers! Yeah, I like Banshee. I like Banshee almost as much as I like Longshot.
Ah, good old Longshot. Is that the fella from Mojo World?
Yeah. Yeah, he first appeared in, guess what? Longshot number 1, guys.
That's simple.
Yeah.
You know, usually when these characters debut, they're in some other book you would never think they'd be in.
Yeah, no, Longshot number 1. And Prospectors, by the way, super cheap. super cheap book, couple dollars, you can pick it up. I think he'd be a cool character to have his own series or something.
Or be in Legion, a TV show.
Possible.
Because imagine, since Legion has these powers, imagine he opens up a portal to Mojo World.
We talked about that, didn't we? We talked about maybe Mojo being the baddie in the second season.
That'd be cool.
Which, I don't know, you know, that was just an idea we had earlier. It's probably not going to happen, but hey, you know what? A guy can dream, can he?
Yes, he can.
So, basically what the deal was with Mojo, or Longshot, he's an artificially created humanoid life form with the ability to defy probability. He's from an alternate dimension known as Mojo World, or the Mojoverse. Mojo being a baddie that basically owns his own world, kind of like Mr. I always call him Machex Pedalix, but...
Miss Plictic?
Yeah, Miss Plictic. And so basically this ability to defy probability means he has luck powers. Basically, if something's a 1 in a million chance, he can make that one chance happen. Which I always found to be a very cool idea. I came up with the idea years ago. I was like, oh my god, no one's ever come up with a character with luck power. And then somebody was like, yeah, Longshot, dumbass. And I was like, what? So then I went and looked it up and I was like, son of a bitch.
You were pissed, weren't you?
Yeah, a little bit. So, you know, he's genetically created, artificially humanoid life form. He has, you know, the ability to defy probability. He was a slave for a while from the Mojo world, and he broke free, and, you know, he was a member of the X-Men. So he was an interesting cat, an interesting character that I think could be pretty cool to have in some type of television or movie world. You know, I think Fox should listen to what we have to say, because we're always right.
90% of the time.
99.9% of the time. Who's the next one? Who do you got?
Another personal favorite of mine when I discovered him through the X-Factor comics in the early 90s, Mr. Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man.
Oh, yeah. That's a cool one. I talked about his powers once, wanting to have his powers because...
His self-duplication.
Yeah, and then you learn.
And you learn.
Yeah, your duplicate goes out and, you know, studies math problems, and then you know them when you reabsorb him.
Absolutely.
It's a fascinating idea.
Debuted in Giant Size Fantastic Four number 4 in February 1975. Len Wein, the writer, Chris Claremont also helped in creating the character, and John Buscema was the artist. And having those self-replicating powers, of course, in some respects, may have saved him overall when he was infected with the Legacy virus.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's good. So if you get infected with a virus, you just make sure you had a non-infected replicant out there.
If you're lucky,
If you're lucky.
You just always keep a replicant out there, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of like fact, I'll keep two.
Station that motherfucker in Antarctica.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Make two copies.
Yeah.
North Pole, South Pole. Yes, two copies of yourself.
Right.
Or put one in the Amazon rainforest hiding out there somewhere.
Yeah, and like once a year or something, you know, you travel there to just like absorb them real quick and then spit them back out.
Exactly.
You know, something like that. So they're updated. And you're updated.
You know, in some ways, I'm surprised he technically isn't like listed as an Omega level mutant. That's some serious power right there.
Yeah, he's a pretty strong dude for sure. Very strong dude. Almost as strong as my next one, Marrow. Yes, I've gone there. Marrow. Marrow is a mutant whose bones grow out of her skin and can be removed from her body, providing her with potential knives and clubs, as well as body armor. Marrow's a piece of shit character. She was created by, yeah, I'm sorry, Marrow fans. First appearance was Cable number 15 in 1994, created by Jeff Loeb and David Brewer. She was a Morlock. I don't know. I've never found any of the Morlocks to have much use. I'm not a big fan of Morlocks. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like they're underground mutants that are uglier or whatever. That's cool. But they not only did they make them uglier, they didn't give a lot of them cool powers. They just made them, like, really dumpy and shitty.
Well, no offense, they live in the sewers for a reason.
Well, that's true. Good point there. So that's Marrow. Not much more to be said about her. She's rather useless, guys.
Well, someone who's not useless, but very probably one of the most useful X-Men you could ever have, is Forge.
Forge.
Debuted in Uncanny X-Men number 184, Chris Claremont writer, John Romita Jr., the artist. This is someone who I'm shocked has not been introduced in some form on television or in the movies. This guy is super talented. superhuman, intuitive, talented, inventing things. He could just make a weapon out of nothing. Almost like MacGyver. MacGyver of mutants. I mean, he's just amazing. Brilliant man.
Yeah, he was on your X-Men team that you wanted, right?
Yes, he was.
A while back, yeah.
Yes, he was. He also has various mystical abilities, a skilled marksman as well. And at one time, he was the boyfriend of Storm.
That's true. Yes. They had that cover where it was like raining or some shit, and they were mm-hmm. kissing. Mm-hmm. They were kissing on a cover.
And also, if you remember the X-Men cartoon from the 90s, you know, he had a couple of small cameos, but very important cameos. He was the one who was moving Bishop back and forth between time.
That's true, he was. Yeah, that was cool. I like that. That whole section of the cartoon was pretty rad.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy that. I enjoyed it almost as much as I enjoyed this next character, Maggot.
Oh, good old Maggot.
If you thought Marrow was a treat, Maggot is awesome. Maggot is a flamboyant South African mutant. Maggot was advertised as one of the strangest X-Men of all. Here's the catch, guys. His digestive system took the form of two slugs, or maggots, which could eat through practically any substance. After feeding, the slugs re-entered Maggot's abdomen and passed nourishment into him, giving him incredible power. Now, if that isn't completely whacked out nonsense, I don't know what is. Who thought of this? Who could have actually created something like this? Who would be, like, for Jarrett, for example, Jarrett would just go crazy over the fact of this, you know, character being created. Who did it? I want to know. It was Scott Lobdell.
That's another person you have beef with, I hear.
I don't. I think Jarrett does.
Oh, Jarrett does.
Jarrett has a little side beef with Scott Lobdell. Don't you, Jarrett? Don't you? Jared's not here today. He can't say nothing. And Joe Madureira, I can't pronounce his name. Anyway, he was the artist. So it was Scott Lobdell and Joe that created Maggot. And I think they were tripping balls one evening together, eating pizza, tripping balls. And they were like, boy, I wish I could just like pull out my intestines and absorb this pizza. It takes too long to eat it, man. And then, like, Zoink's like, for sure, it's gonna... Oh, wait, no, that's something different. Anyway, yeah, that's Maggot. Totally useless, again, type character, but kind of an interesting concept nonetheless. Anybody left for you?
Yes, Allison Blair, also known as Dazzler. Debuted on Ken X-Men number 130.
I like Dazzler.
Highly skilled athlete, trained singer, actress and dancer, highly accomplished roller skater, which I guess that's good.
That's a power.
I guess you're finding, you know, bad guys.
She's like a larger, whiter Jubilee.
Yes, indeed. Before Jubilee came out. Yes, that's true. Ability to convert sound into light beams of various forms and intensity.
Yeah. You know, the cool thing with her is just like in the way people can bring the character to life. For example... If Dazzler she ran out of power, there was no sound or something, she could generate her own sound by talking or any type of noise. If someone screams, she could use that to create energy and blast someone with it. So it was kind of a cool power. And while that is a sort of a one-trick pony, it's really hard to create an environment where there's no sound or can be no sound. And, you know, you'd have to basically tie everybody up, put them in a soundless room, and bind them, you know, to where they can't speak or make any type of noise. Any type of noise. Any type of noise can be sound, and any sound can be generated into a power by Dazzler. So therefore, she's actually quite powerful. Much more powerful than she's given credit for, and I think a good addition to the X-Men. I think that that'll probably do us for this round. We might have some more X-Men later. We might not. We might have something else. Who knows? We're going to get crazy, guys. Going to get nuts.
Be kind and subscribe to us on YouTube.
Yes, please. Tell us we're pretty.
Tell us we're pretty.
On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please, please, please love us.
And with that, we will see you
at the comic shop.